Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to this afternoon's study session for Mesa City Council for Monday, December 6, 2010. We haven't had one of these in a couple weeks, like everyone's coming back from summer vacation. Thank you. The first item on tonight's agenda is to review the items for the agenda for the regular council meeting. Items 3A through 3C. Items 4A through 5B.
Mayor.
Yes, Councilmember Higgins.
Item 4D as in Dina.
4D as in Dina.
The three replacement pickup trucks for the fire department. We ordered two different kinds of trucks, obviously, you know that. I just wondered, what are the tasks that are different between the two trucks that one is so much more money than the other? Like, what do they do differently that one needs to be kitted out or be such a bigger truck?
Two of the vehicles will be delivery trucks. They're a long bed, 3/4 ton with a lift gate on the back. One of the vehicles is a 1-ton truck for the mechanics that will get heavy duty toolboxes and an air compressor and everything mounted on top of it.
So the more expensive truck is the heavy duty?
Correct.
Which is required for that payload or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, great, thanks.
Okay, anything else 4A through 5B? Items 6A through 6F, Councilmember Richens.
Hi, Mayor. There's a couple of council use permits on the agenda for tonight. The one, 6E, is for a entertainment center, and these aren't actually the ones I really want to talk about. Those are the next ones, but just wanted to note that there's a couple of these council use permits on the agenda tonight. I'm not really always feel comfortable for them being on consent. We should probably at least have a little short blurb on why their council use permit is necessary and what they're trying to accomplish.
Would you like that now in study session? 6E, 6F is one of the ones I look at as to exactly what
the other
are.
One would be 7A when we get to that one. 7A is actually the one I'm most concerned about. It's the a recycling center with the rise in copper theft. I need to understand a little bit about how they're doing business.
When we get to 7A, then we'll go over that. Is that okay? All right. Anything else? 6A, Councilmember Fenter.
Yes, sir. I've had the opportunity last week to ask a lot of questions on the second part of 6A, which is who must apply for a license with regard to rental properties. I realize this is only for introduction, so it gives some time between now and when this might be further discussed. And so a heads up, I had some concerns about the 2 or less or 3 or less and what those really apply to. And staff has been wonderful to work with, lots of good information. I've asked them to research a little bit on Phoenix and then what would be the impact if we were not to do 2 or less, but stayed with the 3 or less. And I realize that was a previous council's decision. And I'm wondering if there's a macro issue here of some of the thousands of foreclosed properties, if there's an incentive program. And so it doesn't all have to be hashed out here since it's only an introduction, but I know you've been working hard to get some of that information.
Mr. Mayor, council member, I'd just like to clarify one thing. We are at 2 today. We went from 3 to 2 in 2008. This fix is housekeeping because another section of the tax code related to licensing was not updated in 2008. So we're just making the two parts of the tax code consistent with each other. But we are already at 2 rental properties.
Yeah, and I thought since I have learned when you're talking about the tax code, boy, once that's done, it's written in stone. Don't ever try to call or ask or anything. So I'm just thinking maybe it's an opportunity to relook at that, not to rehash the whole thing, but see the logic and reasoning and how you would apply some of this. And you've answered some wonderful questions, you know, for me that kind of clarifies. I think I was looking at the unintended consequences of how we apply that or how it's managed. So it doesn't have to be we're tight tonight, but maybe in the next 2 weeks getting more information. I know Phoenix doesn't have any tax, you know, on rental properties. So just kind of seeing how that all works.
Well, is that correct?
And I have a question also, because it seems like there's two issues going on there. One is whether we are going to tax on three or less or two or less, which was changed from three to two.
There's no question what we're doing today.
Yeah.
We are doing two or less.
Two or less.
Correct.
Today.
That was the decision that was made by...
Now, there is a question, because I think somebody raised with me, and I just so you can have a chance to explain. What does it mean by houses available for rent? How do you define that? And are there boundaries for that? And how do we define a unit or space that's available for rent?
Mr. Mayor, council members, I'd like to introduce Mickey Tate. Mickey has taken over for Roger Oaken as our tax administrator, and this is really our first opportunity to introduce her.
Uh-oh.
But we'll introduce her by fire here. She's got that answer.
Wait. You're introducing her by fire? Come on. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Basically, on the available for rent, is what's going on is if a person has, say, three houses available for rent, but only one of them is rented out, we would still consider that one rental taxable because he really has three units. So it's just a phrase in order to make sure that even if it's vacant, it's still considered a rental unit.
And when you say available for rent, is that something that's held out for rent? I mean, we're not going to get any confusion over whether someone has two houses in Mesa and maybe their kids or something. It's really a primary residence and a secondary residence. We're not treading into that where we somehow are fighting. It's got to be basically held out for rent, advertised. Even if it's vacant, it's clearly a rental property. Is that accurate?
In most cases, that's accurate. Generally, if somebody has two properties, one obviously is their primary residence, and so that wouldn't even go into the equation.
Okay.
So even if they had a second property, it would still be well below. We wouldn't even contact them probably. If they've got seven houses and maybe a family member lives in all seven, they may get a contact to find out exactly what's going on. Because if there are situations where the occupant is paying expenses like mortgage and property taxes, even though that property isn't advertised for rent, it could still be considered a rental.
But we're talking about the exceptions. I mean, right. If you have a family trust or something where you have six or seven properties, I mean, that
right.
doesn't happen very often.
No.
But you haven't seen a problem where someone may have a couple of and then we stumble in and this available for rent. There's a pretty well-defined line of demarcation between personal and a for rent in how you apply
correct.
That, right?
And also we run into that issue with vacation houses too. So, you know, if it's truly strictly 100% vacation, we wouldn't consider that an available for rent.
When you say vacation, are you saying that if you have two or three properties and one of them's in Sholo and the other one's here in Mesa, that's considered as far as Mesa tax?
No.
Okay.
No. We would still consider that vacation unit a non-rental unit.
Well, how do we get involved in that? Are we not just only dealing with things within the city of Mesa, or is there an application beyond that?
Yeah, the way the code reads is if you have rental units within the state of Arizona and at least one is in Mesa. So if there's multiple properties in other counties or other cities, it may generate a questionnaire or you know, just to find out what is the status of...
And the purpose of that is to perhaps attach people who maybe are headquartered or based outside of Mesa, who are in the business and they have just one unit in that in Mesa.
Right.
Let's say someone lives in Mesa and they have another house. Do we really get in looking at someone who has a personal residence in Mesa who has a unit in Sholo as to whether that's rental or not?
Probably not, because it's still, the personal residence is not available for rent.
Yeah.
The Sholo residence, even if we assumed it was, it's still under that two or more threshold. So they would probably never even get contacted for questioning.
Okay. Yeah, Alex?
I heard a lot of probablys and hopefully and good common sense by you folks, which I appreciate. You're wonderful to work with. When I mentioned, you know, I said, was there some terminology or language that we might be able to clarify so we have what I was told, I think, as you said, is we cannot touch this terminology. This is in stone because it was adopted as a model tax code in the state of Arizona, you know, throughout the state. So there's no tweak. And it just, the unintended consequences, the one I would suggest is a primary residence here, a small cabin up north, and then because you're, you know, this is a case that's going on within the district. Adult children that are out of work, a family buys a foreclosure, they put them in there, they're not charging them rent, they're just trying to make sure they've got a house and under their circumstances. Or you have a disabled older adult child that you don't want living at home, but you want to be able to have close. There's some circumstances, I think, and you're telling us, and I appreciate this, that, hey, we'll use some good common sense, we'll check on these things to make sure that they aren't hit. I just hope you never leave, because if somebody else comes in and has a different view, I'm just wondering how we memorialize this in a way that everybody realizes. If you're a landlord and you have lots of rentals, I get it. You ought to be, you know, doing what you do. But if you're in these difficult times and just trying to get through with the situation, not trying to game the system, maybe there's a way we cover that. So that, those are the questions I was kind of leaving.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, just one clarification. If a piece of, if a property owner has three or more pieces of property and it comes up on tax audits radar scope somehow, what they would get is a questionnaire with those properties to self-identify if they're rental properties or not. And we don't, unless we have some overriding issue with that, we would take that survey at its face value and say, you know, that this is what it is,
yeah,
and
if
they
it's
either
around
have
the state,
two or more,
you don't
or
have any
they
reason
don't.
To go after it. But if they have four here in Mesa and they say these are all things, you may want to look into a little more just to clarify and make sure.
And also, if I could, Councilmember Finter made one comment about Phoenix. Phoenix, it's not that Phoenix doesn't tax rentals, it's that Phoenix does not have an exemption. So they're taxing if you have one rental property.
So this is even more comprehensive.
Correct.
There's
well,
no
there'd be two or less, so they're not counting their primary residence, right? So if you, it'd be the same as ours,
I'm
right?
I'm sorry. Mickey's correcting me in my ear. Say it again.
Yeah, Phoenix and Scottsdale taxes three or more. So you
three
have to
more.
Have at least
it's
three or
primary.
More.
Okay. I apologize.
Mesa taxes two or more.
Right.
And then most of the other cities tax all. Tempe,
right.
Gilbert, Chandler. It, just looking at the closer cities
and
to us.
Mayor, if I could just ask this quick question. If we could research, we're looking at in the zoning code of possibly looking at having a single family residence and some options for a rental property on that. It would be nice to know how you would see taxing that. If it's within the garage or if it's a separate building, or how would you know, how are you going to look at that on the taxing? You know, that sounds like it might be a reality here, and it'd be kind of interesting to see, do you still call that their primary residence, or how with a single parcel will you break out the rental property on that? So anyway, thanks, Mayor.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything else 6A through 6F? Okay, 6G through 7C, Councilmember Richens.
I was just hoping we could get a little presentation from the applicant on 7A, that because of the rise in copper theft, this is a recycling center that takes in that kind of product, and I just wanted to make sure that the city was doing its due diligence in evaluating this business coming into the community.
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, the applicant let us know earlier today that they had a conflict for being here at the study session. They will be here at the regular meeting.
Okay.
I can and have looked at their operation plan, which is attached to this case and adopted as part of the STIPS. And it includes in here that they will be meeting the state requirements of submitting reports to Department of Public Safety and also complying with the City of Mesa Recovery Property Unit as well and anything that comes in. And so, you know, that much I can tell you right now.
The other question I had was there are times that the council use permit runs with the land and not the applicant. Is this the case that it would be if the applicant sold the business, would the council use permit also expire? And so it doesn't create a situation where you can get different people who may not be as cooperative moving in there without an additional hearing on a council use permit.
Mayor, Councilman Richens, no, that particular STIP was not included in the case at this point.
Let's take this off consent so we can evaluate that stipulation.
When you say that, clarify for me that stipulation wasn't included there. The stipulation that it does not require a coming back in, or
Correct, Mayor. Unless we specifically stip it, it runs with the land.
It runs with the land.
Right. And so they could change operators, and as long as they're following
the same operation. Well, let's say we get in a situation, like Councilmember Richens talking about, where the successor operator does not follow some of the things in the stipulation. What's our recourse?
Mayor, if they're not following the operation plan, then we become aware of that, we'd first process as a code compliance case to establish that. But if they are not operating, then we'd have to process a new council use permit to a case to actually remove the council use permit.
Okay, so we can revoke a council use permit.
Right.
That runs with the land. If they're not in compliance with the conditions and stipulations that are included, we can actually take action to revoke that.
Right. It's actually cakes coming back to council. Okay. To revoke it, but it can be done.
Okay. Yeah, Councilmember.
How many have been revoked over the years?
I'm not aware of any.
None?
I'm not aware of any.
So it's probably better to do it at the beginning than try to revoke it later. We may want to consider that for 6E and 6F as well for those council use permits. In West Mesa, we've dealt with a preponderance of council use permits all over that allow people to come and go, tattoo parlors, all kinds of different places without an additional hearing by council. And if we're going to have a council use permit, the council should be hearing these cases, and a stipulation should be in place that these council use permits should expire with the applicant. We should be hearing anybody who wants to engage in these activities in our city should be heard before the council. They shouldn't just transfer automatically because they've been assigned with the land. Thanks.
But what are the standards you use to make sure that even if we hear them up front, it still doesn't guarantee they're going to operate their business in the way you want to?
I mean,
I would suggest if you have had problems in West Mesa, somebody should come and challenge the use permit and ask for a revocation or do something like that if they're not operating in that way.
Honestly, this is the first I've ever heard that that's possible.
Oh, okay. No,
I
think that's the first we've ever discussed it.
That's why I asked John if anybody had ever done one before. I didn't even know that was a possible remedy.
I guess another question is, has there been anyone operating in a manner that you thought that they should have it revoked?
Well, let's not get into that conversation.
No, I mean,
that's
the question is if that's one of the enforcement things.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that.
I don't want to start pointing fingers in a public
meeting. No. I didn't mean it to I just raised it as a more of a rhetorical question because it seems to me that to be almost more effective than saying up front, please pay nice. If people aren't playing nice and they aren't doing right, it would seem like we should use that as a...
Yeah, to give you a good example, the standards have changed for separation between pawn shops. And, you know, there's clustering that has happened over the years with different pawn shops. And, you know, that's shown it's been damaging to the commercial environment for other businesses in that area. And so perhaps that should be evaluated, whether or not those should continue to be enforced. But because those standards have changed over the years, you know, some of them...
Vice Mayor?
One thing you mentioned about when one business leaves, another one takes their place, and about that special use permit, I thought we had this discussion a few years ago that the special use permit went with the owner and not with the business. I thought we went through that discussion. I thought that's what we had done a few years ago.
No, on the council use permits is... We expressly put a stipulation on there if that's the council's desire. If it's not on there, it will run with the land. But that doesn't, as the mayor said, that doesn't prevent the council from, whether the current operator or a future operator, if they are not complying with the terms of the council use permit, we can certainly revoke.
Because I thought we'd gone through this discussion before.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Let me ask Gordon.
We may have done it last week, as a matter of fact.
No. Mayor, Council, we had been operating for several years under the premise that the council adopts an ordinance when they approve a council use permit. Therefore, they were using their legislative prerogative in adopting the council use permit. Because of that, we were using a legislative process instead of an administrative process. The legal theory was it ran with the land. There have since been court cases since that time that have modified that interpretation. Basically saying that all council use permits, for the most part, are administrative actions.
They're business licenses, basically.
Well,
for us, so we can understand, not getting into legalese, basically,
right.
if it doesn't run with the land, it's a license for that owner to operate that business.
Correct.
At that location for the period that owner
Very simple.
Is there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so from that standpoint, council can attach conditions that would limit that council use permit to that owner, or they have the option of letting it run with the land. So they have a choice. But that's been relatively recent within the last couple of years.
Okay.
So that was what I'm remembering, because I know we did that in some instances.
Yeah, we had the discussion like 4 or 5 years ago, for example, that said we couldn't do that because of the recent court cases.
I'm thinking more like about 3 years ago when we went through it, and we were applying it to some businesses.
I can't remember.
Well, let me ask you one quick question, then we'll get to Councilor Green. So these ones that are here tonight, is our standard procedure that we default to the run with the land? That's what we do.
When directed so by council or by the Planning and Zoning Board, we've added the STIP, but typically we've usually let these run with the land.
Okay, but the default is, we go with the land. Councilman Summers.
On that, since 6E and F are introduction, we could add a STIP that says that this one goes with the applicant.
You can add that tonight. You cannot add that to 7A.
Does it have to be a motion or?
Yes, you just amend it tonight. Councilman Richens.
The reason this came up was a tattoo parlor case that the neighbors were able to defeat a tattoo parlor coming into a commercial zone that would have affected the rest of the strip center. And the applicant and their very clever zoning attorneys just found a existing council use permit 300 yards away in a vacant building and moved into the neighborhood anyway. And people weren't happy about it. They didn't feel like they had their day in court in that situation. And that's why I think this is so important, is because, you know, council use permits are regulating certain businesses. Whether they should be regulated or not can be a debate for another day. But if we're going to have council use permits, I think council needs to hear every applicant that's applying for one and not be able to just move into one without an application. So that's why I'm raising
that. Mayor, if I might also add, the code itself sets out the criteria that the council's to use.
Yeah, doesn't this get back to our zoning discussion as to, and you raised an interesting, if we're going to have council use permits, I know we discussed changing or modifying as part of the zoning code what steps should be taken and what designation we should use or consideration we should have for when and how council use permit is utilized.
That's correct, Mayor. But even today it says in the code, it contemplates that the council is going to make specific findings, because the code says the criteria that the council should use is this use compatible with the surrounding areas? Has the operator complied with all the building and fire safety regulations? Is there documentation demonstrating that the building or the site proposed for use is in or will be brought into substantial compliance? So those are the three criteria that the council is to use in determining whether to approve or not approve a council use permit.
Well, I think the discussion we're having here is a council use permit basically a land use decision, or is it an operational decision? I mean, from what Councilman Richens is saying, if we say that it runs with the land, then it's a land use decision. You know, it has the effect of almost a zoning category, because it's in ordinance. You can revoke it, which is different than a formal zoning. Whereas if we go with the owner, that becomes more of an operational issue. We're going to allow this operator to conduct this type of business on this site as long as this operator is the operator. That's a very different approach to council use permit. Very, very different, which we should take up when we talk about. I know we've addressed it once. We should maybe even talk about it a little bit more when we go over the zoning, the final zoning ordinance. Councilman Fender?
Well, I found with my days on P&Z, it was a great tool to have, because a lot of it fell with the operator and in their community outreach, working with the neighborhoods, making commitments, having the neighborhoods get it comfortable with the operator. It was a great way to clarify that, and it works well, and I think it really helped over the hump on many issues coming through council.
You tied it to the operator and what the operator can agreed to do,
right?
Which isn't easily transferable when the next person comes in and you don't have that discussion.
Yeah, so it was a good tool that I remember and I supported. So,
Councilman Reggie, when we brought back, maybe we need to relook at what we talked about before, because I don't know that we were this basic in when we talked about the use permit and the approach, the policy approach that we took. Is that adequately identify what I think the difference was?
Well, I think a great example is the pawn shop that's on tonight that's being transferred to a new owner. I don't think the applicant had the opportunity to do the due diligence that he needed to with all of the council to help us understand who the new operator was. And until we got comfortable there, you know, I've done a lot of homework on this operator between now and then, and I feel comfortable. That's why I'm going to have it come back. But you know, having that opportunity to do that is important to neighbors and important to neighborhoods. So how we want to do that, handle it.
Yeah,
in
that gets back to the policy we want to adopt as to what, how we define a council use permit. Is it a, is a, is a land use right, or is it an operational? And I know that those aren't legal terms, but that's how I can understand it.
Mayor, as Gordon has kind of explained over the last few years, we've developed a sense from council that on pawn shops and some other things like that, you typically want to see that run with the land, so we've pretty much just put that on there to begin with. If it's a feel of the council that you want to see that there every time, you know, we can start doing
well,
that.
Well, that's, and I think that's what you're
Sorting,
but let's not go there today. That's okay. That's, I think we're setting it up for a bigger discussion, because I think there is good and bad about both approaches. But if you just tee that up for when we go over the zoning, and we can then make a change in the ordinance rather than having to adapt every time.
Yeah, I think we should be prepared to add that stipulation to at least 6E6F. We may need to delay 7A for it, particularly 7A. We at least need to. And I apologize to the applicant for not catching this at the introduction.
You want to listen?
I have to work
you
a real
listen,
job.
You want to listen to him tonight
and give their?
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're fine.
Do you want to listen to him tonight, or are you asking for a continuance on this thing? Or do you want to listen to him tonight, give their presentation, and go from there?
You know, I don't know. What's your pleasure? What I mean, whatever I want to facilitate the hearing for it.
I would maybe prefer we listen to them and let them give their case and everything, if unless you feel like you absolutely don't have the information available to make
no,
a decision.
No, we can do
it. Okay. All right. We'll move it. 7A is removed from the consent agenda, and we'll have the applicant.
6E, 6F?
And a question on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
On 6F, I should ask Dave, were you talking all council use permits, regardless of what they're for? You're just throwing it out
really
there.
I feel really comfortable with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're looking.
I don't want to be locked in anything.
We're looking at 6E as a recreation permit for a bar, and 6F is the expansion of a charter school. You know, they're not even in the same category, but they are when it comes to
category. A bar could be a neighborhood nuisance as well.
Oh, no. I'm talking about 6F.
Well, the school, too. I mean, there's some considerations you should make there in industrial zones about,
you know,
there's trucks coming and going in an industrial zone. And
it's an expansion of a school, right. So it's like it's already been there. So I just wonder if we're. That's, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that's the policy decision we need to make, and that's one of the, you know, when we have that, those are some of the considerations, because I think you're right. If we get detailed in this, then you're going to have the city council making very technical and specific zoning decisions, that's something we need to discuss. Right now is not the time to do that.
Right.
But we've raised even though we have done it. It's not the time to do that, because we're operating under our existing code and our existing procedures and things that have been in place for a long time. But I think it's something that maybe we need to bring back as far as the zoning ordinance. Do we really want to expand this? And these are the kind of discussions we can have.
So are we letting 6E and 6F go through introduction?
Well, we can put them in the introduction and add that stipulation in the introduction and then hear them again next week, right?
Okay, if that's the case, if someone's going to make a motion to add those stipulations, we need to remove those from the consent agenda and make an amendment.
Can we do it here?
The way I read it is 6E, 6F, and 7A are all off consent.
Right.
Right. And then whatever
we'll, council. Have to,
we haven't decided what the council
is
going to do. That's a decision you have to make upstairs.
Yeah, we'll have to, upstairs, we'll have to, if we're going to amend that, it would have to be part of the motion to introduce
the ordinance.
But
that's up to the council. Make that decision
that's
upstairs.
Right.
Okay.
Upstairs. Okay. All right. 6E, 6F, and 7A are off the consent agenda then. Okay. Okay, 6G wasn't a permit, was it? No. Oh. All right, anything else on that page, or have we beat that to death?
Yes.
It's dead and gone.
We got time upstairs.
8A to number 10A.
Yeah, Mayor.
Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
I have some comments on item 10A. We're not going to hear a presentation on that, the new firework proposed ordinance?
I'm sure we would.
If you'd like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about it at the last meeting, and then we have a new ordinance with lots of stuff that I don't agree with.
Well, I think we were going to have the council. Okay. It was 10A was the one you were going to?
No, actually
okay.
It was 9.
Well, let's go over 9 first, okay, and then we'll come back to 10A.
Sure.
It's just on 9, I guess it's just 9A, Debbie. Since I wasn't here last week, do I just stay off of that one?
No.
Or do I get the vote on it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You can vote on it. You just can't make the motion.
Let me explain what we're going to do up there. And I have a nice little, Billy gave me a nice little,
I got
what
it.
Do you call this?
You doing it for them out in
no,
TV land or something?
9A, what we're going to do on 9 is that 9A is the reconsideration of the action. And I will explain this upstairs also in the regular meeting. That means that only council members Richens, Kavanaugh, and Higgins can make the motion to reconsider. If that motion is made, seconded, and is approved, then we will move on to 9B, which is the actual reconsideration of the issue, not the vote to reconsider. And at that point in time, any council member can make the motion. Okay? So 9A, only those three that that voted against the motion may, or against the issue last time. 9B, anyone can.
Anybody can make a second on
anything? Anyone can make a second on anything.
And Mayor, if I just might add, if council members are inclined to vote against the item, we would just ask that you place on the record the basis for your opinion because of the code requirement.
Yeah.
If you are inclined to vote against the 9B, when we reach 9B, the merits of that issue, if you are inclined to vote against it, I would ask that you place on the record the basis for your opinions. The code sets out the criteria for denying a council use permit.
Or in plain English, if you're going to vote no, you need to tell us why. On item 10, and we'll have get an update from staff because we had a... But let me explain to you what we're going to...
One sec, 9B still? Just
oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, 9B.
Are we having a presentation on 9B to explain and answer the questions that came up from Councilmember Richens?
Yeah, I believe the attorney representing 9B
is here,
and we'll have
the
opportunity to hear from him.
That's why it's off consent.
He needs to earn his keep, so we'll hear from him.
I think if he gave a presentation now, for some funny reason, tonight's meeting would still be included in the bill, but that's okay. I know you well, Mr. Gilbert. Okay, item 10. We'll have staff give us a presentation, but let me explain what we're going to do on this. There's two options we have, not two options, but item 10 is the so-called fireworks. The way it's been presented on the council, on the agenda, not on the council, on the agenda, is the anticipation that this could be treated or will be treated as an emergency item. This means that in order to have emergency implementation, six yes votes would be required. If six votes are not required, obtained, thank you, we'll have another vote to approve the measure in a non-emergency status. So just because you fail by having six votes, that only means you did not meet the requirement to have emergency. What that means is that if it's emergency, it goes into effect basically immediately, right? And that means that the items that we're talking about tonight as far as the MOU and also the signs in the stores.
Right, signage and use.
And the signage and use, basically New Year's Eve and in 4th of July, will come into effect immediately. If we approve the motion and do not have emergency, the only difference is that it will not become effective until January 13th. Okay, so if it passes 5-2, it will still become law, but the difference is rather than becoming effective tomorrow, it would be effective January 13th.
Well, because, I'm sorry, Mayor.
Go ahead.
It will become effective January 13th because we will introduce tonight without the
December
emergency
13th.
Clause, adopt next week on the 13th.
Okay. So that's the difference. I mean, once again, you don't have to have six votes to approve this, although we do have to have six votes to approve it as an emergency manner. So we may be taking two votes on this, depending on how the first one turns out. Councilmember Richens.
Quick question. In the event that it loses, what's the recourse? What's the ramification?
Okay.
What does that mean?
If we will revert with the law that we currently have in place, which bans the use of fireworks. Now, although our ordinance also bans the sale, it is preempted by state law, so we will not be able to enforce that portion of our code. But the code also bans the use of fireworks, which will be in place.
Okay. So the existing code stays in place if this falls. If this fails.
So basically, if you really don't, you either, tonight, we're either going to have to agree with how this is written, which I might not necessarily agree with, or go to no firework uses at all. So we're kind of cornered right here. There's no option as far as
no,
I see it.
I'm sorry.
No, there's not.
I don't. No,
there
what is.
Is
the option?
If, no, The option is under the charter, when we're talking about an emergency provision, it specifically says the council can amend it tonight. Mm-hmm. So you are both introducing and adopting tonight if the emergency clause remains in the ordinance. You can also amend it. So if there's a provision you don't agree with, we can take that provision out. If you have a provision you just want to change, we can change that tonight and before the vote.
Okay. But at some point, if you don't agree with what we're proposing, the alternative is no fireworks usage at all. So
until we change the ordinance. Well, here's the situation. We have an ordinance in place, and we could do nothing. We could not take a vote. We could ignore the issue, and that's not going to change the ordinance, except for our ordinance would immediately be in conflict with state law as it relates to the sale. Okay, so what you would have is that all fireworks would be prohibited within the city, and state law would govern all aspects of the sale. That if we do absolutely nothing, if we pull this off and say we're not doing it, that's how it would read, and our city ordinance would be in conflict with state law, okay, on the sale portion. So if we approve anything, that will be to amend the current ordinance to allow the use in certain instances, and to enter into certain other voluntary agreements related to the sale. That's the net effect if we approve this, in whatever form it comes through. Councilmember Fender.
But also, either way, if it's approved, it's still going to be illegal to use fireworks come January 1st, right? Because this doesn't take place until January 13th.
No, unless it's approved with six votes, then it comes into a place right now.
Yeah, I'm betting that doesn't happen. Yeah. So, so then my question would be, how the heck did we get to a point that either way, if we get an affirmative vote, it's still illegal to use fireworks January 1st.
Because you don't have six members of the council who agree that they want to change the law now. They'll wait until January 13th and let it come into effect.
I feel the consequence of a parliamentary move here, and it kind of rubs me the wrong way.
I agree.
How did we, you know, well, this emergency clause, why didn't we talk about this 3 months ago then? So if we do get an affirmative.
It's just timing. Yeah. It's just timing.
Interesting. It feels different. Yeah. So I never even heard this emergency clause till. I know. This emergency clause wasn't in any of our discussions up till we got this packet.
No, actually it was.
Mayor Council, if I might.
It was.
Typically, the way we introduce ordinances under charter has to be introduced at one meeting, and then 2 weeks later, at least 6 days later, it can be adopted. Yeah. Typically, it's 2 weeks because that's just the calendar of the council meetings. The charter allows the council in cases of public health, safety, or there's one other.
Explosions.
Yeah. To adopt an emergency ordinance. It requires 6 out of 7 votes. If the council deems an emergency that because of health or safety, this ordinance needs to come into effect immediately, council can do that. The reason we are doing it now is because the state law took effect. We did not have an ordinance in place yet, and we cannot have an ordinance in place before New Year's without the emergency. So if council wants to believes that it is an emergency, that we have an ordinance in place before New Year's, it needs to be now. If council does not believe there's an emergency, you can simply go back to the normal process for adopting the ordinance, in which case it would be effective January 13th.
And I'm sure that if it's not effective on January 13th, that'll have a huge impact on whether people use sparklers or not on January 1st.
The fireworks that are being sold at Costco today, mm-hmm. as of December 1st, by law, current city of Mesa law, cannot be used.
Correct. That's correct.
That's correct.
Okay.
And if even we pass this sprinkler or this fireworks ordinance, it will still be illegal to use until June of 2011.
January.
Well, January 13th, which means that, yeah.
The ordinance is, yes. I mean, what we're doing is till June of next year.
You're right.
So somebody has pulled off something good here. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Well, Mayor and Council, the difficulty is there was no consensus of council in any discussion, which would have had to happen in first of November for us to avoid this conflict. And so, you know, with the last discussion, I can tell there's still concern on this council about even what's in front of you, but we took the direction we were given in the last council meeting. We had this discussion.
And I think
this is the first, and we actually put it on the council agenda on an agenda without another study session as directed by the council. So based on the discussion and the conversation of the council, we've tried to follow the conversation.
I can tell you, I am as responsible for the agenda as anyone by charter, and I can tell you there's been absolutely nothing. This is how it played out. There's cities, we are not the only city who does not have an ordinance. Phoenix doesn't have an ordinance right now. There are several cities in this state that do not have a fireworks ordinance. That's just how it's played out. As a matter of fact, I think the first one that was even enacted might have been three weeks ago. When we first took it up was when cities initially started looking at fireworks ordinances. I mean, that's just the way it was. I don't think we're in any different situation than most other cities were. It's just like I said, we had more debate than other cities have, which is why it's taken us longer to enact this ordinance. Councilmember Regan.
And why can't we do a continuance to cover this in a study session in depth to see if we can? Okay, and then we can have a special emergency the next day in your January fireworks will be covered. Not the next day, the next week. Next council meeting.
You can. Councilmember Higgins, we can do whatever we want. Once again.
So why are we having to do this today? I don't understand.
We don't have to do anything.
Let's not do this today. Let's have it continue to whenever.
And the result will be what?
Well, we can actually have some discussion about an actual ordinance that, since we didn't have study session on Thursday, we haven't even talked about.
No, we've talked about this. What this is this is based on our last study session. Staff tried to incorporate comments and everything as best they could. If you have questions on that comment, then today's the day we want to comment. If you don't feel comfortable in voting on this, we can wait till next August to do it. And what we have is we have something in place where we have nothing to do with sales because it's totally up to state law, and the city, it's prohibited. Right. We can enact an ordinance or we can ignore an ordinance, whatever you want.
Good.
I'm just wondering, with all that's going on in this city, why we're spending 8 meetings and all this on sparklers, and I wish we could come to some resolution that says, here's what we're going to do. Because reality is, we cannot control the sales of fireworks. And as much as we want to wish that we can control, and I'm not going to say fireworks, because everyone thinks M80s. Mm-hmm. I even saw a news report where they were talking about this issue, and they were showing firecrackers go off and M80s go up. These are consumer fireworks. These are sparklers and whatever those are, fountains. So if we do nothing, those are still outlawed in the city of Mesa. But we have no control over the sales, and I think it's a misnomer. Unless we want to have a big court case, if this is an issue this council wants to use public funds to go after on the sale, that's the decision of the council. But the fact is, we cannot, regardless of what we do, we cannot control the sale.
I still would like to move to continue this to at least Thursday study session.
Okay. We have a motion, a second to continue this, to pull this off the agenda and continue it. Do we have any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have, you want to say vote, council member? We have 3. All opposed? Nay, raise your hands.
Okay.
Vote is 4-3 against, with council members Finter, Jones, Smith, and Richens voting against. The motion fails.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what?
Okay, great.
Sure. You want to go ahead and give the presentation then on what you have presented to us?
Sure, Mayor. Might have Fire and Alfred come up.
Well, and what other form of punishment would you like to be exacted upon?
In fairness, I think if you go to the memo and see the bullet points, those are the takeaways. You recall in the last study session we had with council, we went back around and said, okay, here are the items we're going to include in the ordinance. Mm-hmm. I think the memo and the below where it says discussion provides the outline of the ordinance. So I guess the question, is there anything in any one of those bullet points that the question is there any question of the council?
Yeah. Councilmember Finter, or Higgins, I'm sorry.
Can I get more specific instead of bullet and go to section 6-21-5.A? This is the liability for emergency responses related to fireworks. Mm-hmm. I know we talked about this, but there's no way I thought there was any agreement on the fact that we were going to charge.
There was not.
Right. It wasn't an agreement, but
there was not.
We were asked to put it in.
Where we left off was we said, would you at least put it in? We could address that tonight.
All right. That's what we're doing. Then I'd like to address that tonight, guys. I mean, even the logic behind this makes absolutely no sense. I want to have people know that if they have a fire in their backyard, we want them to take care of it, if it's small, before it gets out of hand. I mean, just so funny. Or we're going to charge them $500. How is that fair? It doesn't even make sense to me. I mean, I see what you're saying, but it's ridiculous in thought. There's no logic to that for me.
Well, for you. Okay.
Correct.
We've talked about this. We brought it up. And, hey, Scott, we're gonna address this issue, so if you could real quickly. Let's see what the sense of the council is as far as leaving this in there or not leaving
it. I just want to make an analogy of, I mean, this is the same thought when we look at the SEPTED ordinance, where we don't want to make it, we want to encourage people to report police activity, right? Otherwise, we had a thought that we would say, you know what, if you have so many calls of service, we're going to start charging you. But of course, that's goes against what you want to do, which is encourage people to report police. So that's the same thing. People,
yeah, we understand.
You know, I don't. You guys are inconsistent.
What's the sense? I mean, we brought this up last time. We talked about this last time, and there wasn't really a consensus when we didn't really talk about it.
I agree with you.
Okay. Leave it in. Take it out.
I'd like to bring back about continuing this, because I really don't want to debate this. This is just the wrong place to debate and try to rewrite this ordinance. And
I agree
so,
with you.
Since I was on the winning side, I'd like to recall the question about whether or not we continue this to another study session, because this is just going to go bad really fast, in my opinion. So
it's going to go bad?
There, I will make a motion.
I thought we passed bad about 5 minutes ago.
We were hit a disaster. Pulling this off the agenda.
All right, let me ask you this. Is the reconsideration of the reconsideration? Do we have anyone else who agrees that we should continue this? I think if you do that, then we're in a fourth, and I have no problem continuing it. Could I ask you one thing? You know, like I said before, I disagree with you on this as far as holding people responsible for the use of what regards to how we feel about whether they have the right to use it or not as a hazardous material. And I think people should be held responsible. I think with freedom and rights come responsibility. And I think this is one way to hold people responsible for that. This is not a deal maker or changer, because I don't feel great about the fact that we spent this much time on what I believe is a nuisance thing anyway. I don't want to reiterate what I think about the fact that we're having to deal with this, that they legalized the sale and did nothing with the use. The legislature punted the city. And so if we bring it back on Thursday, I hope we would have a very swift, quick discussion on it. And the fact is that it would then not be open at the time. You know, you're not going to go through January with legalized fireworks. That's just the way it is on the timing.
Unless we adopt on the 13th with the emergency.
With the emergency thing. So this Thursday, if you could come back with specific questions, specific answer, or specific questions, specific points, so we can deal with this in a quick,
expeditious
manner, rather than re-arguing things that we have already argued. We're where we are because we went through this twice, and we've reached, and I think staff did a good job of trying to incorporate what they believed was the direction of the council. It may have been a 4-3 direction,
yeah,
but
wasn't
it was still
it,
the direction.
It wasn't a unanimous consensus.
It was still the direction.
We're not representing this.
I'm not interested in replaying the discussions we've had before. If there's specific issues as it relates to what's in front of you that seem to differ from what was presented before, let's cover that. Let's don't rehash what we've already talked about. And that's where we're headed, is rehashing, arguing this. Okay, and I'm not wanting to re-argue this.
Just really quickly then.
Go ahead.
But what we're given here is an ordinance written by staff that has accumulated everything people said in a 4-3 vote, so whether you agree with it or not. And the only option is if you don't agree with this, then we have nothing, which means the fireworks are outlawed. So there is no option here, and it's just kind of odd.
Yeah, there is. Get 4-3 who agree with the changes you want to put in there. come back Thursday, tell us what you don't like about that law, Dina, and we'll incorporate that, and then you can see how the votes fall out at that time. So there is an option. If you don't like how the staff interpreted what the direction was, then offer an alternative, and then we'll see how that plays out. But the fact of the matter is, the timing is such that without an emergency action, no, this isn't going to be in effect by New Year's Eve. It's just not going to be there unless we do it emergency wise. Does that sound okay?
Right.
All right. No problem. Okay.
So, Mayor, we've reconsidered that item is off the agenda. Is that
correct? Item is off the agenda.
All right.
Oh, and thank heavens we've reached the end of the agenda.
I have a question on item 11.
Okay. Chris? Exec session, can we do that?
We can do it later.
We can do it later?
Yeah.
What about item 3A?
Why don't I go ahead and do that one now?
Okay, why don't you do that?
Give me a second.
So we're going to skip the executive session because that's an update. We can do that on Thursday if we need to.
Right.
And item 3A, why don't you give a presentation on where we are?
Okay, hold on. All right. Beth, why don't you come on up so you can help me fill in the blanks? So, Mayor and Council, what I wanted the opportunity to discuss with the council or present to the council at this time is the kind of the timeline and the process we're going to be using for the development of the Cubs spring training facility. We have discussed with the Cubs a process or the options of different processes that are allowed under state law for the procurement of professional services and for development of a facility like this. As we visited and as I visited with the engineering staff, we've agreed and are moving forward with following the construction manager at risk process. Now that's a process that, and I'll kind of explain that a little bit later, but it is one that we're very familiar with, that we've been very successful with in Mesa as far as the developments of some pretty complex facilities that we've recently done. And that would include the most recently the municipal court building, and then before that the police crime lab facility. I'm not sure if I'm saying the right term, services building. So it's worked very well for us under both those, and frankly, in many ways, those two facilities, as far as complexity of the programming and design, are much more complex than frankly a spring training facility and stadium. And so we think that this methodology will work best for us. It allows for the team, which there really will be a development team with the decisions regarding this project moving forward. We've developed or proposed a project team in agreement with the Cubs that will include three representatives from the city and three representatives from the Cubs. At this time, the representatives from the city will include myself, our city engineer, Beth Huning, and our director of Parks and Recreation Facility Services and Assets and everything that belongs to that, Mark Hirschberg, because obviously he will be a major operator of the fourplex of facilities and impacting the public space around the spring training facility will be his responsibility. The Cubs will have three individuals, which includes the owner, one of the owner representatives of Todd Ricketts will be involved in the project team. So we'll share in the decision making as far as the process of selection for the architects, engineers, the design team, as well as recommending the contractor. The process that we've outlined to date, and we're working on the specific schedules, we're trying to have to work around a little bit of the holidays that are coming up and the timing of when we can get together as far as meetings with both groups. But as part of the construction manager at risk program, the first element of that will include developing, or we have developed and we're working on comments between the two groups, is the RFQ, or the request for qualifications. That qualifications proposal will be going out hopefully in the next couple of weeks. And that has the input of both the city engineering department as well as the Cubs.
That process really allows us to begin a competitive process for the selection of the design team. They'll be selected in the first part. As part of this is a little bit unique, and Beth probably can tell us what's more standard, but we've requested that as part of the pre-submittal process is there's going to be an actual or there's going to be a conference or a meeting that's going to be held between all the interested design teams or proposers as with the project team. So again, the city reps and the Cubs representatives, so that we can answer any questions, but we can also create emphasis of what we're looking for as far as the programming, the experience of the design team, and also an opportunity for the city to emphasize that we'll be looking for the teams that incorporate participation by local professionals. And so that'll be part of the exercise that we'll go through on the front end with these submittals or the potential design teams before they actually submit their proposals. So we'll do that.
If you could expand on that a little bit, and then mm-hmm. Councilmember Kavanaugh has a question. Because this teams, there's many different professions and disciplines, I guess, say, involved
right.
in this. I mean, you've got engineers, you've got architects, you've got
landscaping.
You've got, I don't know how many different, mechanical, civil, design. You've got all these different things involved. And so when you talk about the team, it right. really is a team.
Sure.
There's not just one person or
no.
one firm that's going to run this. This is a very large group that's coming together.
Yes. Right, and part of that will be our emphasis that they need to have a comprehensive team
yes.
that demonstrates that not only can they do the programming elements of this project, but then the execution of the project.
And hopefully that team, obviously we don't build stadiums every day, but there are people who do that for a living.
Yes, there are.
Or do a lot of us. They have a lot of experience, but on the other hand, they don't build in Mesa every day.
That's correct.
And so, someone from out of town may be wonderful in designing a lighting system for stadiums, and we want to get the very best. But they have no idea how to create design elements that are community design elements.
Yes.
That they don't have the connection that a local firm would have. So
right.
hopefully we'll have this.
So as part of that process, at some point there'll be presentations made by groups by the teams to the project group, and then a decision will be made on the selection of the design team. What that'll allow us to do is
Chris. Can we,
oh,
can
sorry.
We, oh. Councilmember Kavanaugh had a question.
Sorry.
Before
you went.
Just a comment and a question. I served on a similar team with the Mesa Arts Center, and I think the approach that you're taking is very similar to that. Again, that was a very complex operation and invited submittals from design teams that had many different professionals involved with it. And I guess, and I think you addressed it, there's some concern on the part of local firms and businesses to ensure that they have at least a fair opportunity to be part of the design teams that make presentations to you, and I haven't heard anything that would prevent that from.
No, as a matter of fact, we will encourage that. I know, I think the process we typically go through, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to have the pre-submittal meeting, is to create the emphasis on both experience as well as local experience and related firms. And I think Beth is very consistent on that and has been since she's been here. And you can see that in the design teams that we've hired. That doesn't mean that every work we have is going to go to a local firm, but it does, I think, if you can look at most recently in fire stations and other things we have, emphasize that and created those opportunities. And I think the key here is making known the opportunities and making sure that if we get a lead design group that has national experience in building stadiums, they understand that the city's still going to be looking for a local blend and flavor that will be part of that. And we think it's not only is that important for us to support the local professionals, of course we want well-qualified, experienced professionals because this is still public funds that we ultimately have to be responsible for, but two, we think, and not that we think that we're that different and unique, but they understand the city's processes and
yes.
know how to make the applications.
Their zoning and their permitting.
So that
and
helps.
All those processes.
Well, we want people that understand us, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I've dealt with, landscape is a good example. I mean, I'd love to have somebody who has expertise in local. And what,
right.
What
familiar
works.
With the land, the
familiar
types of
what
landscape.
Works. And
right.
What
fits into
we
our
want
environment.
Achieve.
Yes.
So I just throw that as an example. Yeah, Alex.
And it would be nice if we have just a moment taking it past the design stage, but down into the actual general and subs. What flexibility will this CM at risk give us to be able to have the possibility of local preference or folks that, again, understand everything that we're talking about to be able to participate in this process.
So are we talking about on the design element?
No, past the design.
Okay, let me get to that point. Okay. So we have the design group will be selected. And I think Beth and I've talked about the design team will actually be on board and going through the programming exercise with the project team, which is important for the city and the Cubs really lay out the specific, as much as we've seen kind of the larger picture, we need to get into the specific programming of the different elements of the project. Within about 3 to 4 months, and I don't know what percentage of work you're thinking that they would have performed, Beth, at some point then we will then go begin the process.
Yeah. Basically, what we're looking at doing up front is a programming master planning stage. You know, we've in general talked about how many seats and so forth, but we need to talk about more detail and how the building, the clubhouse lays out, how the stadium lays out, what kind of decks we want, what kind of seats we want. There's a whole lot of detail yet that we need to tie down. It's important to do that now because it makes it more cost-effective when we get the contractor on board. We're more decided on what we wanted. The drawings can be clear. So that's really important to us right now. That is about 1% of the total project cost and probably between a 15 to 25% design, so to speak. It really lays out the elements of what we want to build, how they're going to fit on the site, how we're going to serve them with utilities, what are the things we need to modify, like streets and the treatment plant that's on the site, drainage, those sorts of things. It sets the big picture for the project. And when we're done with that, at that point we'll be bringing in the contractor through the CM at risk process. Some of the things we are going to include in the request for qualifications for the contractor will be a subcontractor selection plan. That's required in the state law. But we'll also be asking them to come in and conduct a workshop with local firms, allowing them to introduce themselves and get in front of these larger firms that can bond for a $85 to $100 million project that we're talking about. That requires an extensive bonding capacity. So it's a very large firm that can do that. But there are many smaller firms that can help them through the subcontracting process.
And Beth, that's why we put the emphasis on that we'll pick the general who may have the larger overall experience of doing stadiums and other facilities right. like this. By selecting them and then requiring them to have this workshop open house before they choose the subs, what that allows for them, instead of necessarily bringing with them the subs from other parts of the country, it at least gives an opportunity for the local contractors. Again, definition of local contractors is those who have an address and do business in Mesa. That they would then have the opportunity to be introduced and meet the general contractor to talk about their qualifications and their deliveries, because obviously we're going to be working very hard to make sure that the general contractor does a very good job of giving us the best
possible
opportunities for pricing and experience, even at the sub level.
And at some point, we do rely upon the competitiveness of the bidding market with the subcontractors. After they narrow them down to 3 to 5 subcontractors, then we competitively bid those 3 to 5 subcontractors, and we're there on the day that the general opens all of those so that we are ensuring competitive. We do have a budget, and we will watch that budget very closely throughout this process, but very typically we do require them to shortlist and get down and then bid those subcontractors with specific sets of work. But there will be hundreds of different firms involved.
Yeah, and I think that at the level, once again, at the final day, we sort of have a joint responsibility here, and that is to the taxpayers of Mesa to make sure they get the highest quality for the lowest price. To our those who live in this community, I think it's and are in that business, there's no guarantees that they'll get a job, but I think that we can do whatever we can to provide them the opportunity to compete on an even level. And if they're qualified and they have that, that I don't know that you can ask for any more than to be in the game.
And I will tell you that many of both the design firms and the contracting firms are already putting their teams together, but a lot of them have discussed it with me, and I've said many times, we have a very strong local market here in our valley and in our city, and there are a lot of great firms there, and it would be good to involve those and include them and incorporate them in the project teams because of their local knowledge and experience.
And I would hope that we would be as forceful as we possibly can in those suggestions that they consider that.
We can, yeah, is within the laws that we can emphasize that we do.
Hopefully, we encourage local businesses knocking out the park.
Yeah, and once again, I've had a few local call me, and I said, guys, if you're sitting by your phone waiting for someone to call you, you're missing the boat.
Right.
You need to get involved.
But Mayor, what we will do though, our commitment
we'll make
it
available
is
where they
we want, once we pick the general, we will have a well advertised opportunity for the local.
Well, that's what I mean.
They need
to show up.
With them.
They need to figure
out. Yeah, they've got to be there.
And that's not just subcontractors. It's really materials and equipment suppliers as well.
Is there
are many
anyone involved
out there that can
get
involved.
Need to, because I've had a few people just say, "Hey, nobody's called me." Well, they're not. What we're going to do is we're going to make available opportunities, and you need to show a little initiative yourself and find out. What is, you know, call our engineering office, find out when these are going to be, see who you might contact, who, you know, maybe some of the players are, and reach
public
out to them.
Maybe put it on the website.
All that stuff.
Make it easy.
Just quickly, really appreciate all these comments where you're going. I think it's the great way to go. With regard to bonding capacity, I've heard in the past on generals that sometimes generals, two of them will team up to be able to meet that bonding capacity. Is that a possibility in this situation?
We have had joint ventures on projects. I believe the Greenfield Water Reclamation Facility was a joint venture. They can be very successful, and they can do that.
I mean, on this one, you got several companies that this is what they do for a living.
Yes,
you know?
There are.
And this isn't that huge of a job for a lot of these big guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big job, but they do things that are bigger.
They do things that are much bigger,
yeah.
But this is a very big project for us.
Well, it's a big project for anybody, but you know, this can be, the people that are out there in the market can bond this.
There are.
And you know, there are some projects that even the big guys, I remember, you know, things like terminals, airports, and the rental car. Those are big. Those are too big for even a single one of these big companies to buy. We're not in that. We're not in that. We're not in that realm yet. So appreciate that.
So that's just. So we're still refining the actual days in between. But again, because we're still working on our RFQ and sending an RFQ out during getting ready to go into this holidays, we'll send it out, but we'll probably give them more time on the back end of that to respond to. So,
and I think the important thing, I've had some distress calls from some people, you know, somehow there's a urban legend out there that decisions have already been made. And I said, we haven't even started the process. Now, there have obviously been people that are from day one have been sniffing around, have been educating, and those are the normal players. But I think it's good to reiterate, there have been no decisions made. This process is just beginning. It's going to be an open process. It's going to be one that people have opportunity if they, and if they're qualified, hopefully they're on even. They're on even
terms.
And Mayor Council, as we make the decision, especially on the professional services, we'll certainly inform you of that so you're aware of who the team members are. And then obviously we'll want to give you the information because the decision on the general contractor will come to council.
And just one quick thing, we are getting ready to put some information out on our website very quickly. We'll try to get as much information related to the project, past reports, graphics, as-built drawings of the area. We're working to have those out hopefully this week to anybody who's interested in the project so they can start to study and be ready for anything that they'd like to use for their proposals, submittals.
Great, thank you. Any other questions? Or either Beth or Chris. Awesome. Thank you. All right. Item 4, acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. I have a motion from Councilmember Summers, a second from Councilmember Cavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Acknowledged. Here reports on meetings and conferences attended.
Maybe for next time.
Do it on Thursday.
Yeah, we'll do it on Thursday. We do have scheduled meeting general information. Mr. Brady, you want to very quickly go over that?
Today's the 6th. Tuesday, December 7th, District 3, thank you. We'll have our Building Stronger Neighborhoods kickoff at 6:30 at Dobson High School. Good deal. And then this Thursday, we'll have a study session at 7:30 a.m. And reminder, this Saturday, we have a household hazardous waste collection event from 8 a.m. to noon. And this will be at the North Center location. So, and then well, I'll wait and do the next one on Thursday. There's quite a busy weekend coming up. So, thank you.
Great. Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
Point of personal privilege, Mayor. Tomorrow, I'd just like to thank my wife. Tomorrow, we've been married 19 years.
Yay. All right.
The poor woman. Thank you.
I would like to congratulate your wife.
And have her
for 13 years. most, you know, my anniversary, my wife gets, you know, funeral condolences for having been stuck with me for a long time. You can understand why. Ron Peters, Ron, have you had most of your questions answered on this? Are there any other questions you want to ask or things you want to talk about as far as the selection procedure for Cub Stadium?
I'd like to make a statement if I may.
You may make a statement, sir, and if got a couple minutes there.
Good. That's all I need. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you very much. I appreciate this time that I can come before you. One of the things I want to straighten out, you know, I've been sending a lot of you emails about this AE selection procedure. It's a major concern of the professionals within the city of Mesa. It's not meant to be a condemnation of the engineering and architecture department of the city. They have been terrific in the way they have worked with the professionals over the years that I've been here. And I've been here for 20 years practicing architecture and running a business. What I really want to do, and I'm really encouraged by hearing Mr. Brady talk about the RFP process and following that Arizona revised statute for professional services selection. That is a requirement of the state. The architects in the state have fought long and hard to get qualification-based selection put in as a law. And we are encouraging that, definitely, that it be a qualification-based selection procedure. We also would like to see the city, these are tough times for architects and engineers. We have a 40% unemployment rate in the valley for engineers and architects, 40%. In Mesa, the 9 firms that I called lost over 100 jobs within the last 2 years. And that equates to around a $4.5 to $5 million a year payroll for the city of Mesa for those architects and engineers. Whenever the city has a significant project like this, we really do like to see the support of the council and the city in the selection of local A&E professionals. We recognize that state law says you open it up to the state, and we have no problem with that. We have no problem competing. We have no problem of qualifying per the RFP process. But we really would like to see when there's tax dollars spent, this isn't being funded by a sports authority like a lot of the other facilities have been. This is being funded by the City of Mesa funds. And therefore, we would like to see definite numbers put out that would identify a percentage of local involvement. And we think that that would go a long way to really helping a lot of these out-of-town firms, the specialists in Cactus League professional baseball stadium design, look at that local professional, the design professional, as a possible resource. And we encourage the city in their RFP process to identify and put that forward so that the local professionals can be assured that there'll be some amount of those funds spent in acquiring jobs in Mesa for the design professional field. And I thank you very much. I just wanted to make that known. The city's been great. I think this is a great opportunity for you to strengthen that position with a lot of the design professionals who need jobs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Okay. I have a motion to adjourn. Councilmember Summers, second by Councilman Richens. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll see you upstairs in about 5 minutes.